Welcome back to season 3 of Snubs and Dubs. We're talking about the snubs and dubs of the 74th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how's it going?
Pretty good, Kyle. How about you?
I'm good. Next time, I want you to actually have a slide whistle here, though.
You know, I thought that wasn't bad. Yeah. For no warm-up and just deciding to do that out of nowhere 2 seconds before I started speaking, I liked it.
Well, that's good. Did you watch anything last week?
I haven't yet. Still not free from the study schedule, and it is oppressive. How about you?
No, I've just had a busy week, and I also haven't been able to watch anything else except we're doing another back-to-back. So two movies, Well, you might have noticed from the title, but we're actually going to be joined by a guest on this episode, friend of the show, Tim Plamondon, and also just friend of us.
Let's not give him that yet. He's got to work for it. He's only known us for over a decade.
He's going to be popping in for the discussion right after our plot section, to look forward to that. But great. Season 3 of Snubs and Dubs is covering the films from the year 2001. And for episode 8, we are talking about Donnie Darko. I don't think either of us had seen this before.
Correct. I had not seen this, and I'm assuming you had not seen this.
I had not seen this.
Wow. Wow. We're both Darko virgins.
We're both in the Darko.
Nice.
I mean, it was one that I had been wanting to watch for a while. I knew that it was kind of like a cult classic, like something that if you were a little bit edgy as a kid, you might have watched. But yeah, it kind of slipped me by, and I was glad to finally get to it. Well, if you're interested in Donnie Darko, I've included links to physical media related to it in the show notes. There's a very nice Arrow Video 4K box set I have. It's beautiful. You should buy it. It's nice. If you buy the link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. Reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation, so if you haven't seen Donnie Darko yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it. Donnie Darko is a 2001 American science fiction psychological thriller written and directed by Richard Kelly. It has quite the cast. It stars Jake Gyllenhaal, of course, as the titular Donnie Darko, Jenna Malone as Gretchen Ross, Maggie Gyllenhaal as Elizabeth Darko, James Duvall as Frank the Rabbit. We've actually seen James Duvall before. He's a returning, as well as obviously Jake Gyllenhaal. He was in Independence Day.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. We also have Drew Barrymore as Karen Pomeroy, Mary McDonnell as Rose Darko, Catherine Ross as Dr. Lillian Thurman, Patrick Swayze as Jim Cunningham, Beth Grant as Katie Farmer, Noah Weil as Professor Kenneth Monatoff, and also the first ever film role for Seth Rogen, and apparently Disney Channel's own Ashley Tisdale.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
she was the girl when Patrick Swayze's character was at the school. She asked about like her sister being fat, basically.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah, that's Ashley Tisdale. It has a runtime of 113 minutes. And after premiering at Sundance January 19th, 2001, it went wide in October 26th, 2001. Jason, what do you think of Donnie the Darko?
Okay. I do like it.
Yes.
It is a good movie. In some elements, it's a really good movie. I just wish it made some sense.
Yeah.
It could have made at least a little bit. It didn't need to make a lot of sense. It didn't have to all be spelled out, but a little bit would not have hurt.
Yes.
Kyle, what's your thoughts?
I am completely in the same boat. I actually really liked it. I thought it had a lot of heart, a lot of like random little bits of humor that I really liked. And obviously the characters are great, but I do agree that it is a little egregious that it is so, it's almost unexplainable in itself. Like
entirely.
Like it's so hard to wrap your head around. And I get leaving things up to your interpretation. I've liked films like that in the past before, like Under the Skin last season. I really liked how much it didn't answer, but also that did answer some questions. And, you know, you could pick up on a lot of things with this. Like there seems to be a lot of complicated things happening around Donnie that I would have liked to have at least a little bit more of a concrete answer as to what has happened or what is happening, instead of having to go onto YouTube or onto just like Google and try to figure out the answers for ourselves, or apparently watch this director's cut that answers more questions. It should work on its own. And I think that is kind of the big glaring flaw, is that it doesn't answer a lot of questions, which some people could say, well, you're just too dumb. And I'm
They'd be right. But outside of that.
But outside of that, it does feel like, it should have been a little bit easier to manage. Mm-hmm. And like the only reason I think that we're saying that is because it was so ambiguous with a lot of things. Like, I mean, I just said, but I'm sure like you can also appreciate not having all the answers. Mm-hmm. We don't need to have all the answers all the time. And I think it makes for a better movie. And there's a reason like why this movie is so beloved is because you can rewatch it and have a different experience and still not know the answer, but just enjoy the run through. I don't know. Maybe we're asking too much.
I feel like my main concern is that we didn't get all the rules of the world. Yeah. And from there, we couldn't figure out the end. Because I don't mind if I don't understand the end game. That's not a huge deal. But we were kind of cheated of the tools that could have gotten us there. It's like if we watched Lord of the Rings, but no one explained to you that wizards existed. And you're just like, what the fuck is this Gandalf guy's problem? How does he do this shit?
Oh, well. Should we get to the plot?
Let's hop into a plot.
So Jason's going to read straight through the plot. If you don't need the refresher, you can skip right to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's Donnie Darko.
On October 2nd, 1988, troubled teenager Donald Donnie Darko sleepwalks outside, led by a mysterious voice. Once outside, he meets a figure in a monstrous rabbit costume who introduces himself as Frank and tells Donnie that the world will end in precisely 28 days, 6 hours, 42 minutes, and 12 seconds. Donnie wakes up the next morning on the green of a local golf course and returns home to discover a jet engine has crashed into his bedroom. His older sister Elizabeth tells him the FAA investigators do not know its origin. Over the next several days, Donnie continues to have visions of Frank, and his parents Eddie and Rose send him to psychotherapist Dr. Thurman. Thurman believes Donnie is detached from reality and that his visions of Frank are daylight hallucinations, symptomatic of a paranoid schizophrenic. Frank asks Donnie if he believes in time travel, who, in turn, asks his science teacher, Dr. Kenneth Monatoff. Monatoff gives Donnie The Philosophy of Time Travel, a book written by Roberta Sparrow, a former science teacher at the school who is now seemingly a senile old woman living outside of town. Donnie also starts seeing Gretchen Ross, who has recently moved into town with her mother under a new identity to escape her violent stepfather. Frank begins to influence Donnie's actions through his sleepwalking episodes, including causing him to flood his high school by breaking a water main. Gym teacher Katie Farmer attributes the act of vandalism to the influence of the short story The Destructors, assigned by a dedicated English teacher Karen Pomeroy. Kitty begins teaching attitude lessons taken from local motivational speaker Jim Cunningham, but Donnie rebels against these, leading to friction between Kitty and Rose. Kitty arranges for Cunningham to speak at a school assembly where Donnie insults him. He later finds Cunningham's wallet and address, and Frank suggests setting his house on fire. Firefighters then discover a hoard of child pornography there. Cunningham is arrested, and Kitty, who wishes to testify in his defense, asks Rose to chaperone their daughter's dance troupe on its trip to Los Angeles. With Rose in L.A. and Eddie away for business, Donnie and Elizabeth hold a Halloween costume party to celebrate Elizabeth's acceptance to Harvard. At the party, Gretchen arrives distraught as her mother has gone missing, and she and Donnie make love for the first time. When Donnie realizes that Frank's prophesied end of the world is only hours away, he takes Gretchen and two other friends to see Sparrow. Instead of Sparrow, they find two high school bullies, Seth and Ricky, who are trying to rob Sparrow's home. Donnie, Seth, and Ricky get into a fight in the road in front of her house just as Sparrow was returning home. An oncoming car swerves to avoid Sparrow and runs over Gretchen, killing her. The driver turns out to be Elizabeth's boyfriend, Frank Anderson, wearing the same rabbit costume from Donnie's visions. Donnie shoots Frank in the eye with his father's gun and walks home carrying Gretchen's body. Donnie returns home as a vortex forms over his house. He borrows one of his parents' cars, loads Gretchen's body into it, and drives to a nearby ridge that overlooks the town. There, he watches as the plane carrying Rose and the dance troupe home from Los Angeles gets caught in the vortex wake, which violently rips off one of its engines and sends it back in time. Events of the previous 28 days unwind. Donnie wakes up in his bedroom, recognizes the date is October 2nd, and laughs as the jet engine falls into his bedroom, crushing him. Around town, those whose lives Donnie would have touched wake up from their troubled dreams. Gretchen rides by the Darko home the next morning and learns of Donnie's death. Gretchen and Rose exchange glances and wave as if they know each other, but cannot remember where. And that is the end of Donnie Darko.
Wow. I just want to point out that this was completely accidental. But the events of Donnie Darko start on October 2nd. This episode comes out October 3rd. Oh, so wow. We are like right close in there. Yeah.
27 days.
Yeah. And before we jump to our interview with Tim, what is your read on like what happened really? So this was like a parallel timeline sort of thing?
Yes. Okay. So from what I have, because I wanted to watch people explain how the difference between the theatrical and the director's cut works. And in the director's cut, they talk a lot more about them living in a parallel plane and Donnie has to do certain things to rectify that, to close the plane. I don't care about a lot of that because I don't think it makes a lot of sense, even from that very thorough interpretation of time travel and everything, because the premise of that is that that parallel plane starts with Frank calling Donnie away from the bed. So if he never did that, none of the events happen, and all of the events are trying to make right at the very start where Frank calls Donnie away from the bed.
Yeah.
So I don't care about most of the storyline behind that, especially since it's not actually in the theatrical release.
Yeah.
In my particular interpretation of it, it's a story about accepting your demise in a way, because one of the themes is Donnie being afraid of dying alone, him witnessing Gretchen's death, and ultimately he accepts his own death, wakes up in bed, and then the airline engine crushes him. My take on it is it's the mirror of a coming of age story along with accepting his own demise that inevitably is going to happen. But before that, he, you know, comes to terms with who he is, has some childhood fun, learns about himself on the way, and then is ready for his eventual demise. But that's just my reading of it, which is one of 3 trillion.
Yeah.
Kyle, what's yours?
I mean, like, yeah, I kind of started on that like alternate timeline sort of thing. But then, yeah, what you just pointed out also doesn't make sense, because Frank is, I guess, like some sort of person that's guiding Donnie to go down the path to accept his death and reset the timeline.
But it was only ever off because of Frank calling him out of bed.
So that's kind of like a backwards logic sort of thing. Or like maybe he doesn't call him out on the first time. I don't know. I might have to rewatch and pick that up. But it does seem like the reason he's having these recurring dreams and these, quote, schizophrenic episodes is because of Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the journey feels kind of weird. But like I still really liked the whole path it took. And I'm okay with like not completely understanding the entire journey. And, you know, if YouTubers want to obsess over it, they can obsess over it and I'll watch and I'll enjoy. But maybe we should just jump to our interview.
Let's see what Tim thinks.
All right.
We are what some would call happy to welcome what some would call friend of the podcast, Tim Plamondon, on to talk about a great movie that some would call Donnie Darko. Tim, off the top, do we have free will?
Before we even get to free will, I just want to lay something down really quick, okay?
Okay.
Season 2,
lay it down.
Episode 7. Jason, our snap streak gets called out pretty hard by Kyle.
Very hard, yeah.
So we were at 1,700 days. We are now, I'm just looking at it, 1,922 days, okay?
Wow.
We're almost at 2K. That's a basketball game? Can we start playing basketball at 2K?
That's right.
Okay, I'm excited for that transition.
So I just felt like bringing that up again and saying like the streak is going, the friendship is blossoming, and things are good, okay?
Yeah, we have some beautiful fruit that have grown out of this blossoming friendship. It's got to be a record, though. Nearing 2K snap streak.
There's no way anyone's
there needs to be a leaderboard. I can't imagine anyone has done better than that. I think we're probably the best snappers to exist.
Easily.
What is Snapchat going to give you for this incredible streak you guys have going?
I would imagine like plaques, medals, something.
Sponsorship deals.
There's got to be something in it for us.
Yeah. Every time that I pull my phone out, I have to be like, now it's time for the Snap Machine 2000 brought to you by Snapchat, and I get $2.
Presented by Pepsi.
Wow. Yeah, it is funny because Tim, like this is the first time you've been on the show, but you have been kind of mentioned every now and again. Jason will plop you in. I just don't think he can avoid you sometimes. And I think that episode you mentioned, episode 7, was the Boyhood episode where it started on the manager showing up at Mason's graduation. And Jason was like, that's fucking weird. That's so weird. You can't be friends with your manager.
Whoa. Specifically, what was weird was your manager showing up to your graduation. Tim, question for you. Now that we got Kyle on the spot, did you come to my graduation party?
No, I wish.
Oh, so it wasn't weird, Kyle. Okay. This is the only reason why Tim's on. I don't know what a Donnie Darko is. I just brought Tim here to finally get some backing up that he did not come to my graduation party. Therefore, I am not a hypocrite.
That's right.
And everything is good.
Okay, great. Well, I'll let you believe that and you guys can keep your cute little snap streak going. Yeah.
So I guess
Thank you very much.
I guess to answer the question, yes, you have free will.
Nice. At the very least, we do certifiably have free willy, which is more important to the human experience.
That's right.
Okay. Well, maybe to get to Donnie Darko, Tim, before we started recording, you mentioned that you recently watched this to get on the pod, but the last time you watched it was over 20 years ago?
I mean, I think it came out in 99, is it?
2001.
It's close enough. It came out in 2001, so I would have been, I mean, that's 21 years ago. That sounds about right. Yeah, I watched it around 20 years ago.
So did you watch this bad boy in theaters when it came out?
No. See, in 2001, I would have been in Lac La Biche, and in Lac La Biche, the theater, it's long since been demolished, but we would get movies that were about 8 to 12 months past their theatrical release in the city. So we would just get everything later. So Donnie, I never would have seen it in any sort of time frame at the theater. I think one of my friends probably put it on a DVD back 100 years ago.
Interesting. I imagine the whole system of getting movies out to Lac La Biche was like one guy had to walk it over from Edmonton.
No, I'm pretty sure they had to splice it on scene. Like it came in many different like chunks. They had to like tape it together and, you know, they'd have like a little 15 minute intermission while the guy does that and you go grab a snack.
Oh, that's incredible. Now, how does it hold up from having watched this yesterday to how you remembered it from two decades ago?
So I remember it being very dark, very mysterious, very weird, but it was like as little as you could understand it as possible. It was pretty much the case yesterday. Like I've learned nothing in the 20 years that has stayed with me.
Yeah.
So, but it was good. It was good to rewatch it because I remember feeling after watching it, feeling like, wow, that was so beyond me. And I must not have developed any further as a human because it's still fairly beyond me.
Yeah. The difference now is after watching it, you know, 20 years on, you can just pop open YouTube and search Donnie Darko ending explained or just entire movie explained and get the, you know, somebody's speculated answer. Whereas I can imagine 20 years ago, like that wasn't just lying around in the Encyclopedia Britannica. Like,
no, I mean, I
that must have just been miserable.
Yeah. Well, I just remember, like, I do remember watching it with my friends. And I mean, we probably just talked about it being like, oh man, that was so cool. But we probably didn't really even understand why it was cool or what made it cool or any further understanding. I mean, I would have been like 16 or something like that at the time, 16, 17 years old. And we definitely didn't have Wikipedia, YouTube or anything like that back in those days. So, but I definitely remember my friends and I watching it and being like, I don't know, maybe it's because we were that age that we were just like, man, we're so cool. We watched this dark movie, like that sort of thing. It made us feel cool.
This movie needs like Donnie Darko explained. I need, like, after watching the explanations on YouTube, I'm like, okay, that's great. I didn't understand that. Yeah. I need someone to spell out the spelling out.
Yeah. And that's one of the cool things, but also maybe one of the downfalls of this movie is it leaves so much up to interpretation and unexplained that, like, you could maybe find some answers by like thinking about it and rewatching it, or I guess watching the extended edition, which I guess adds more answers and more explanation. But without us frivolously looking up, like, how did this movie function or work, or what was like the time travel aspect of it? Why was weird globs coming out of Donnie's, you know, body?
Well,
why
was he seeing a bunny teenage man? Boy in high school. We know why globs are coming out of his body.
You know, a buddy of mine said, he actually called me in the middle of the movie. I said, oh, sorry, I can't talk right now. I'm watching Donnie Darko. And he said, make sure you're watching the director's cut, because if you don't, it will make even less sense. And I definitely wasn't watching that.
No, and I think we were staying, because like we were trying to stay true to like what people would have watched at the time for this Academy Awards season. And so I made sure to not watch the director's cut. And I do want to go back and watch the director's cut now, because I feel like if it can add more answers, then I was already hooked enough by the initial theatrical version that I want to go re-experience a lot of it and add more context.
Right.
From what I've seen online, the difference between the theatrical release and the director's cut is only 20 minutes, but it's like 20 minutes of the necessary information for you to understand what happened in the story.
They left the 20 minutes of answers out.
Literally. Because I guess I don't know what the reasoning was for the theatrical cut, probably just to make it more harder to get really in the nitty gritty for audiences because it technically makes it lighter weight by not explaining what's happening. So they went with that. But yeah, like he has telekinetic powers, which is not explained, but that's how he gets the end, like the jet engine back to his house is because he's has telepathy abilities. And there's so much more about like why Donnie's the person having to do all this stuff that is never explained. But I think in general, most of the movie's not explained. So whatever your interpretation is, it's as right as anyone else's.
Yeah, like I'm still wondering, what is a fuck ass?
That's a great question, Tim. What? How would you describe a fuck ass? What is that to you?
You know, someone who's just being a bit of a fuck and a bit of an ass, like kind of together. And I, on my notes, I wrote some notes on my phone. I just wrote in quotations, suck a fuck.
Yeah.
So I was going to, you know, you guys flipped the script because I was going to put that question on you. But, you know, I just think it's someone who's just being a little bit of a fuck. A little bit of an ass, and you put those together, and I think that's what he was.
Interesting, because when I think of a fuck ass, I just think, oh, Tim.
That's how it's going to be, eh?
We also didn't get the answer to how does one exactly suck a fuck, but
again, that's probably in the 20 minutes left.
That's in that lady's book. That's in the prologue of that very scientific time travel book is how does one exactly suck a fuck, and also a definition at the back for fuck ass.
I found myself throughout the whole movie trying to find themes and trying to find like a bigger, broader picture. Like what's the big overarching statement? What are they trying to say? And I was really, really trying so hard and I just couldn't find it. And that doesn't mean I didn't enjoy it. For some reason, I love it. I love the whole movie. I'm very captivated by it. And I like uniqueness and I like interesting things. And this is very unique and very interesting, but I couldn't at any point figure out what they're trying to say.
What about this movie exactly kind of captures that for you? Because as a guy who sees 7 foot tall rabbits with scary masks all the time, this is just kind of like a day out of my life. So for you, what makes this so special?
I like uniqueness, and this is just like, it had like a flow unlike any other movie I've ever watched. You don't expect a movie that's called Donnie Darko to be particularly light, but it was very dark and very mysterious. And like, I think every step of the way, each event that happens, it just kind of like, even if it wasn't really explained, you're still intrigued by it. You're still like, oh, okay. Well, where's that? What's happening now? Why is he doing this? Okay. How did he know this? How did he get, you know? And I think that by itself probably gave the movie the legs it needed to be like interesting at all points.
Yeah. And I also think it really has interesting and well thought out and well acted characters. Like this cast is absolutely absurdly good. I mean, obviously right off the bat, you got Jake and Maggie Gyllenhaal. So that sibling dynamic is locked down. Like there is no better sibling dynamic than your actual sibling. And that opening scene that we kind of just talked about with the fuck ass and suck a fuck, like that really set a good fun tone in the sense.
Yeah.
Like it's weird because this movie has like just sprinkles of fun throughout it. That like it's got good humor, and like I really like the line, I'm starting to doubt your commitment to sparkle. What's the
sparkle
motion? Sparkle motion. Yeah. Yeah. Like there's certain characters in there that are so funny, but yet it's still such a really like edgy movie in kind of the best ways.
I mean, I think maybe that's why I really like it is because I was like an angsty, edgy teen at those when this movie came out. So it kind of it kind of feels like of the times for me. So it just feels like, yeah, it's so like edgy and raw and like kind of mysterious. And like, you're right. Yeah. It has these great little comedic moments, kind of like it kind of reminded me of Breaking Bad in that sense where it kind of had these little pockets of interesting moments, like when they're talking about the Smurfs,
like yeah,
little moments like that. But overall, you're like, oh, this is pretty raw.
Now, as a man of music yourself, what did you think of this soundtrack that I would describe as slapping?
The very first comment on my little notes that I put is this great soundtrack. But I will say, though, it does feel like you're waiting an hour and 54 minutes for Mad World.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, like, I didn't know, but this Mad World edition was written for this movie. I thought was just like the normal edition of Mad World. But Mad World, the original one, is written by Tears for Fears, who also has a song in the movie, The Head Over Heels, which I have not stopped listening to since I watched this movie. It's such a good song. But yeah, like the Mad World edition, which I forget who does this version, but
Gary Jules.
Okay. Of course.
But like Yeah, it is like the definitive version now, at least in my head. Like, I don't really hear Mad World from that original version. Like, actually, when I was listening to the original version just to see, it was a bit jarring and surprising because that is not how I imagined this song.
I feel like in general, I'm going to make a big statement here because that's just what I do. I feel like movies used to capture their, I guess they used to capture movies a lot more with their music. And I feel like this is a really present, like music is really present in this entire movie. It's like the whole way, every song really fits each scene or each transition, and Mad World being like such a feature track for the song was so big. And like, you're right. Like now when you think of Mad World, you think about the Donnie Darko version. And I feel like nowadays music is less of a statement in a lot of movies. I just feel like music is not like it's forgotten or not that it's lesser, but it's like, man, it used to be like, there'd be a transition between two scenes and you would just get this song that felt like it was part of the story.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I don't think of a lot of movies that are currently running that have a soundtrack that makes me want to go look up what the songs were afterwards. But rewatching all these movies from like even the ones that we did for the 1996 season and now for 2001, a lot of these have songs that I'm looking up after because I want to listen to them because they care about making a big soundtrack.
Yeah. Totally. Soundtracks were such a big part of it. And I think they still are to some degree, but like they really elevated movies in a different way back then. And I feel like the Mad World to Donnie Darko is a perfect shining example of that.
I do also want to point out, Tim, I don't know if you knew this, but this was Seth Rogen's feature film debut. And I will make an extra point to say that his first ever spoken line on film was, "I like your boobs."
I know. When I saw Seth Rogen, I was like, wait, what? There's no way. My note for that says, "Donnie's friends are baddies. Also, Seth Rogen."
Now, when you say baddies, do you mean bad people or beautiful people?
No, baddies, Jason. They're smoking cigarettes and they're slightly racist. And they're baddies, Jason.
And they don't understand Smurf lore that well.
That's the message you took. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, you're right.
I think that's what most people are going to glom onto here. And I think a lot of the reason why the movie's so hard to understand is you kind of get stuck on the fact that no one really gets the Smurfs that well. And then you just spend the next hour 20 thinking about that. And I don't know what happened after that one scene.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that scene is so out of place. They're like shooting jars. They're like talking about Smurfs having sex. And it's like in broad daylight, like everything's all like dark around it, except for that scene is pretty like daylight out. It's just such a weird scene in the middle of this movie.
Yeah, but it does add to the charm of the movie, and it's clearly a memorable scene that Jason has been stuck here talking about, the Smurf rant.
Oh yeah, super memorable.
Speaking of memorable, I thought this movie had a lot of memorable characters, including the dad. I don't know, he didn't have that much screen time, but actually the whole family was just like really nice. There was no like really shitty parent, and I loved how much the dad enjoyed that Donnie told his teacher to go like shove the love hate thing up her ass. And like, he was just like grinning and smirking and like nearly bursting out laughing in the office there. What a champ.
I feel like you kind of get a little bit of context of where Donnie might get a little bit of his twistedness from. Like his parents, like, you know, his mom's kind of always got a drink going. The sister's like a bit of a shithead. Like the dad kind of thinks that his antics at school are pretty funny. Like there are small little things, and it kind of adds this like, oh, maybe that's where Donnie got a little bit of his edge from. Obviously he's on a whole other level, but I feel like it almost gave a little subtle context to who Donnie was.
Yeah, one thing this movie is filled with is good role models like that. So I'm glad that there's a lot that can be taken from this.
Especially the role model that turns out to be a pedophile. Like that's just quality stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Tim, you got any final thoughts on Donnie Darko? Anything to kind of close it out?
You know, I was really upset that the FAA showed up instead of the National Transportation Safety Board. Like the NTSB has been around since 1967. They are the natural fit to be there on scene when an airplane engine falls through a roof. But the FAA showed up. And I was really upset about this. Like if Jason was stuck on the Smurf plot, I was stuck on the fact that the NTSB wasn't there. Like I couldn't get over that. I like a huge plot hole, monstrous plot hole. I don't know. Did you guys
shut it down?
That?
That's the end. That is a good point. I can't believe they let that fly. That's insane. And they're going to besmirch Gargamel after that. Like this movie has nothing going for it.
but yet we keep watching and keep coming back for more.
Yeah. All right, Tim. Well, thanks for coming on to this episode of Snubs and Dubs. Is there somewhere that we can plug or things that we can plug? People want to find you places?
No, no one wants to find me. No, nothing to plug. thank you for the offer, but I got nothing.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good. Well, some would call it thanking you for what you've done on this podcast. And that would be me. Thanks for coming, Tim. It's always nice chatting with you. And now it's in a recorded history that you can look back fondly on when we cross that big 2,000-day snap streak.
I can't wait for that day. Jason, Kyle, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tim.
Tim. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Wow. Ah, great work, Tim. As always, for the one time you did it, knocked it out of the park. Kyle, do we want to get to what some people who are not us three think about this movie?
I think we should. Rotten Tomatoes, critics, 87%.
Well deserved, I think, as far as a craft of a movie goes.
Now, what do you think? Audience is going to be higher or lower?
Well, here's the thing. I have to imagine it is kind of a cult hit. People obsess over this movie and explaining it, and it is really lived on in popular culture. I'm calling it right now. I'm taking the over for audiences.
Wrong.
Damn it.
It's not lower by much. It's actually at an 80%.
Interesting.
IMDb is an 8.0. Metacritic, 71%. So overall, pretty critically acclaimed. Like, not like over the moon critically acclaimed, but still like for an indie first-time feature sort of deal, like that's pretty good acclaim.
That is, yeah. And I think this was one of the first films written by the director. Because this came out
like
when
ever?
He was...
Oh, sorry. I thought you just were making like a sweeping statement that directors didn't write their films before the Donnie Darko.
No, this is one of the first movies, period. This, because of the time travel principles at play, it came out in 2001, but also was the first ever.
Yeah. No, this I think was his feature film debut.
I believe so.
Director. So... yeah, it was pretty cool. I don't know if he's done much after this, though. I think this was kind of his peak.
It's kind of crazy because this is the kind of movie you'd think would be the foundation of a huge, massive career and not the one-hit wonder kind of variety.
Kind of strange.
Interesting.
Well, it was an indie film, so it only had a budget of $4.5 million and it only made $7.5 million. So only a $3 million profit. However, I do think that this movie did find its audience and its money much after the theatrical run.
Absolutely.
There was like the DVDs and the VHSs and everything after. Like the fact that this, you know, Arrow Video's very substantial 4K box set can exist speaks to the fact that this movie does have an audience, and to this day people are still going back to watch it. So I don't think that that number, you know, even though it is shockingly low, is that shocking?
No, it does make sense. Because, and even to have any kind of financial success on this is pretty good. Yeah. So nearly doubling your budget in gross, that's totally fine.
What was shocking to me was that this had a lower box office than Ghost World.
Wow. Yeah. That is actually pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. This had the Gyllenhaals in it.
Yeah.
What are people doing watching Ghost World? you know, they probably did have some help that it was a pre-existing IP. People who knew of the comic probably went to watch Ghost World, whereas no one knew about Donnie Darko.
Yeah. And like Donnie Darko, now it's an iconic name. But like at the time, it's just somebody's name.
It's
like,
just a weird name.
Yeah, like even Indiana Jones didn't start off as Indiana Jones. It started as Raiders of the Lost Ark. You can't just slap a name and think, oh yeah, I know exactly what that is. I know what Donnie Darko is. Like, yeah. I don't know.
What else would you name this though? Frightening Rabbit?
Frightening Rabbit.
Off-putting large rabbit guy?
Yeah, I don't know. They could have thought a little bit harder, but
anyways, Kyle, scores?
Yes.
Scores.
Enjoyment.
What is your enjoyment? I have the buttons here, so I'll turn this around.
Right off of my view of this, I gave it a 4.5. I actually really, really enjoyed it. I do think I just docked the half a point because I couldn't understand it that much. But while I was sitting there, I was having a really good time.
Yep, that's fair. I gave it a 4 for very similar reasons. I think they actually did need to give more information what was going on for it to be fully enjoyable, but it was quite good. How about your craft?
I also gave this a 4.5. Soundtrack is amazing. The, you know, costuming works well. But I just found that it was really well shot and really competently and interestingly edited. It just really worked for me on a craft level. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially for a first time feature director. Like, yeah, he did a really good job.
Like, this was very close to the Five Realm for me, yeah. Especially since it's an indie movie. A lot of people's first for everything, and it comes out so well.
Yeah.
So I'm 4.5-ing it as well. But this might be one where I think back like, no, that does deserve a 5.
Yeah.
And I might extrajudicially bump it up, but we'll see how it goes. But for now, 4.5.
Yeah.
What's your execution?
I gave this a 4. Acting is phenomenal. Like, the young Jake Gyllenhaal and the young Maggie Gyllenhaal are all doing really great things. It's no surprise to me that they are huge stars now. And all the supporting cast as well is really strong. I just docked at that point because overall the script is really good. But again, like, it could have been a little clearer. Mm-hmm. And it didn't do the audience many favors by making it so convoluted and confusing. Mm-hmm. So it lost that full point for me there.
Yeah. I'm going to go 4.5. I think it was quite close to the ideal outcome, but it wasn't tight enough. It had a little too much slack in there, a little too much extra in some areas, a little too much not enough in what was going on. So it's not going to be a perfect, but god damn, will it be close.
Yeah.
And what is your rewatch ability?
I give this a 4. Definitely want to rewatch this. Really want to go through it with the director's cut. But I do feel like this one is easy to come back to and also easy to recommend. Like, obviously, it's confusing. And I think you would preface that to people when you're recommending it. To be like, this movie's confusing as fuck, but it's really good. Mm-hmm. So you should watch it.
Don't try to understand it. You can't. Yeah. Just enjoy it.
Just get your YouTube watch later queue readied up with Donnie Darko ending explained. What does Donnie Darko mean? What's going on?
All you need to do is Donnie Darko, then like three question marks, and you'll find every answer online that some nerd put together. I'm slapping this a 4 for rewatchability as well. Same points. I'd be happy to come back, and I am curious what the difference between the directors and theatrical really truly is.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, well, that brings us to you giving this a 17 out of 20 for an 85%, and myself giving this a 17 out of 20 for, you guessed it, also an 85%. That brings us into ranking town. Mm. Kyle, currently you have Memento, Shrek, Ocean's 11, Harry Potter, Spy Kids, Gosford Park, Ghost World. Where is Donnie Darko?
This is taking my new number one spot over baby. Memento. I kind of had that feeling right after I finished watching it. I was like, this is the new number one. Like, I just felt it was better than everything I had watched so far. And even though, like, we have been kind of critical of it in some points, I feel like because we liked it so much, and there is that one glaring issue, we're going to, you know, focus on the glaring issue. But I really enjoyed it, and I think people should check it out.
I'm right there with you. This will also become my new number one, bringing my ranking to Donnie Darko, Shrek, Memento, Harry Potter, Ocean's 11, Spy Kids, Gosford Park, Ghost World. When I finished watching this movie, I thought, finally, we have some hot content that I was not familiar with, didn't know where it was coming in, and a movie out of nowhere really caught my imagination and was so well put together that I'm like, okay, this is a movie that can sit at the top of the rankings right now. Because I wasn't feeling that strong after Shrek. Yeah. I still feel like at the moment that was probably the right move, but I'm glad that Donnie Darko came in clutch a week later so we don't have to look at the Shrek number one ranking for long.
Yeah, no, I totally feel that because we have been having kind of a slow start. Like, this is your highest rated movie so far, right?
I think it's both of ours, actually.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, clearly we put it both at number one, but like, I think even by a lot, like a lot of the films that we've talked about so far, you've put in like 65-ish kind of ranking in terms of your scores. Mm-hmm. And so it is so nice that Donnie Darko came in so confidently with that big Dawn energy and just swept up to number one. It's good.
Does feel good having a nice strong competitor at that number one.
All right. Well, do you want to get into fun Letterboxd reviews?
I wouldn't wish for anything else.
Okay. So this has a Letterboxd score of 4 out of 5. Pretty good. Pretty high.
Yeah, that's pretty strong for Letterboxd.
This was the most liked review on Letterboxd for Donnie Darko. It's a 5-star on a rewatch by Tasha. Me. This is a masterpiece. Also me. has to Google, what is Donnie Darko about? I think that encapsulates pretty much everyone's feeling.
Yep.
This is another 5-star on a rewatch by returning Letterboxd review speaker, number one Gizmo fan.
Nice.
The most unrealistic thing about this movie is that no one but two people would show up for an Evil Dead screening on Halloween. Sounds really fake, but okay.
That is messed up, especially when it wouldn't have mattered if other people were in the audience.
Mm. Have you seen Evil Dead?
I've seen the first one. I don't think I've seen the sequels.
Okay, that was the first one. Oh, the sequels are better. Fuck.
What?
Yes, they're better.
I don't know if I've ever heard that.
Yeah. Well, okay, Evil Dead 2 almost does like the same, like it almost says Evil Dead 1 again, but like with just wackier, zanier shit.
I've heard that number 2 is fine, but I've never heard that like the rest of the sequels were worth anything.
Army of Darkness is a lot of fun too.
I'm willing to hear him out. Okay, I enjoyed number one.
I watched them all last year and it was well worth my time. All right. Last one. 3.5 stars on a rewatch by Liam. A lot of rewatch. I think a lot of people come back to this movie.
Everyone's going like, okay, maybe this time I'll get it.
Somehow it makes perfect sense that in his debut film, Seth Rogen's very first line is, "I lick your boobs." Yeah, what kind of, I put that in our conversation with Tim, but it's such a fun fact that I will now forever hold in my heart that every time I see Seth Rogen now, I'll know his first line ever spoken in a feature film.
I like your boobs. I feel like he's been chasing that high ever since. Like the rest of his career has been trying to get back on that feeling of complimenting some random chick's boobs.
And then there were about 100 Letterboxd reviews of just like, sometimes I doubt your commitment to sparkle motion, which we get it, guys. It's the funniest line.
It's like, a good line. However, it doesn't need to be your review.
Yeah. Academy Awards. Mm-hmm. Now, small budget, indie film. Do you think it had any?
Here's the thing. Jake Gyllenhaal famously snubbed at every turn of his career, so he's not getting anything.
Definitely not.
I have a feeling that this did not receive anything. Would I be correct?
This time you would be correct. Yeah. Yes. Academy Awards, 0. Oh. But definitely something I'm going to be returning to at the end of this year, because I definitely think Gyllenhaal, again, classic, needs a look. I don't know if there's that much supporting here. Maybe his girlfriend. Yeah. It's definitely Gyllenhaal. Like, he's great. Like,
he's really good.
Dark look. You know? He's got this look on him, his face, especially when he starts entering that like sleepwalk phase, and he kind of just tilts his head down and does that like upward look and has this just crazed smile on his face. It's awesome.
And he has really good emotional range. Like his scenes with the therapist are captivating. They're really well done.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I'm considering also this screenplay just because of how like well it kept me entertained.
Yeah.
But also like, and this is also a lot of screenplay, clearly. I mean, if Gosford Park could get a screenplay win, right?
I think so.
For how like dense that screenplay was, I think this could maybe deserve a look because of how wacky and clearly thought out in some capacity way. And like, it's just funny, and writing comedy is so hard, especially in like a dark drama. So
I feel like editing deserves at least some talking about. I wouldn't be hating an editing nomination either.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think this one's going to hold on. It might be the Fargo of this year where we'll hang on to it for the whole season. I could picture that.
Yeah.
All right. So other notable awards. It was the nominee for the Saturn Award for Best DVD Special Edition Release. In 2006. So.
A little retroactive work. Yeah.
Richard Kelly did win the Saturn Awards Special Award for Young Filmmakers Showcase. He was also nominated for 3 Film Independent Spirit Awards, Best First Feature, Best First Screenplay, and Best Male Lead. None of them did that win. So, I feel like definitely going to be worth a look at the awards for this one later on in the season.
Absolutely.
Would you like to hear the interesting facts?
I am so curious. I hope one of them is just telling me what happened in that movie.
There were a lot of interesting facts, and I kind of just had to pick my favorite ones. So this movie was filmed over a period of 28 days, which you might notice matches completely up with the length of time depicted in the film.
I wonder if that was intentional. Because why else would they say 28 days in the movie? It didn't matter.
Yeah.
Could have been anything.
Well, they wanted it to land on Halloween.
Yeah, just started earlier in October. Started September 29th or something. I don't know.
All right. Writer and director Richard Kelly came up with the idea for the future blobs while watching football. John Madden used to use a telestrator where he'd diagram a paused video to show where the players were about to go moments before letting the tape roll. Kelly watched this while high and started thinking about how what would happen hypothetically if, quote, someone upstairs was doing that to humans. Fittingly enough, Donnie notices the first future blobs while watching football.
That's kind of funny. I like that a lot.
At one point, it looked like the film was going to be released directly to home media markets. You wouldn't guess, Christopher Nolan stepped in and was an influential factor in securing it a cinematic release. What? So, wow.
He just felt like, wait, this movie's about time? Put it in a theater.
This does feel like a movie that Christopher Nolan would drool over, for sure.
He'd somehow make it more complicated. I don't know how he'd find a way.
In the movie theater scene, Richard Kelly originally intended to have Donnie and Gretchen going to see Judd. Never heard of that.
Who's Judd?
However, there were problems finding out who owned the rights to the movie. Finally, another director comes to the rescue. Sam Raimi stepped in and allowed Kelly to use the distort footage from The Evil Dead free of charge.
Oh, what a man, Sam Raimi.
Yeah, the scene was filmed at the Arrow Theater at 1328 Montana Avenue, Santa Monica, California. The Arrow closed in 2003, but reopened in early 2005.
Good for them.
Two more. Jim Cunningham, played by Patrick Swayze. His Cunning Visions infomercials were shot at Patrick Swayze's actual ranch in Lakeview Terrace, California. Patrick Swayze even wore his own clothes from the 80s for the film.
Oh, I love that.
Lastly, at the wrap party for the film, Seth Rogen and Jake Gyllenhaal agreed that they had no idea what the film was about.
Us two stars. They're just like us. They don't understand what's happening.
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts on Donnie Darko?
You only brought up that Arrow version of Donnie Darko you own three times, and I'm proud of you. It could have been more. You only did three. Love
it. It's so cool. I've been meaning to watch it. I bought it, and I was like, I'm going to watch Donnie Darko now. Maybe that's why we ended up in 2001 this season, just for that one.
And then you didn't even watch it off that, did you? Because isn't that... You did?
I did
watch it. Oh, that's not director's cut. That's theatrical?
No, it actually has both. Incredible. So, yeah, and they're both on 4K discs, which is... Because a lot of 4K releases, if they include a director's cut, sometimes they'll include like the more popular version on the 4K disc, but then they'll do the Blu-ray version as like the theatrical or the director's cut or whatever is the least popular version. So this was great. I mean, Arrow Video has been doing great stuff. You can see all of these. Like I have Donnie Darko, Dune, Django, just all the D ones there, Flash Gordon. They have these really nice cardboard box sets that include like a booklet and a poster and usually some art cards sort of thing, as well as 4K remastered versions of the movie. This is not the podcast for that. All right,
bumped up to four, yeah. But still good work. Kyle, do you have any last thoughts?
Nope. All right. Well, I want to thank you all for listening to season 3, episode 8 of Snubs and Dubs. And again, thank you to Tim for joining us. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pause, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on Donnie Darko or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobias on Twitter and Jason's at Wendy_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
There were three extraordinary children in the Tenenbaum family.
I should sell it, yeah.
Chaz Tenenbaum was a financial expert and started buying real estate in his early teens. Margot Tenenbaum was an acclaimed playwright and won a Pulitzer Prize in the 9th grade. Richie Tenenbaum was a champion tennis player ranked 2nd in the world by age 17. They were brilliant. They were famous. They were unlucky enough to be the children of a man named Royal Tenenbaum.
That's right. Next time we're talking about Wes Anderson's The Royal Tenenbaums. Can't have a Snubs and Dubs season without Wes Anderson. That seems to be the key so far.
He's inescapable.
All right. Well, make sure to watch it before next episode. It's on Disney+. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.